and to come to London. We were in Manchester yesterday. That was a pretty obvious stop in terms of an outside London community. But I said to Sarah, I didn't just want to go to Hendon. We lived in Hendon for, you know, 15 years, and people from Hendon go, "There's green thing, that's where the Jewish world ends," and that's really not the case. And we know that's not the case. And I specifically said I wanted to go to Warren Wood because I've been connected a little bit with the shul here, Rebbe St. Chappas here somewhere, I think. Here we are, and I've seen the growth of the community. So, kol hakavod to everybody here for everything that's going on locally, and thank you very much to Lucy for everything that she's done to put it together. She's really been very on it, very focused in all sorts of different ways. A few other thank yous that I just want to make. First of all, it's an enormous honor and a privilege to see Rabbi Kirsch here. And I want to use this opportunity in public to thank him, not just for everything that he's done for Sarah and myself. Rabbi Kirsch and Sarah and myself have been connected for almost 40 years now. We just worked out, almost 40 years. Rabbi Kirsch, I don't think made our shidduch, but he was under our chuppah, one of the Eidim at our chuppah. In fact, it's only because of him and Rabbi Rubinstein that we're actually halakhically married. So all that has come out of that marriage is in his. It's thanks to him in so many ways as well, and also Rabbi Stepsky, who of course is here. That's a shidduch that Rabbi Kirsch did make. That Rabbi Kirsch set me up as a chavrusa with Rabbi Stepsky in 1991, 1992. I still have all the notes from the Gemaras that we learned together, and that's a wonderful opportunity as well that I had, and I want to thank Rabbi Stepsky in absentia, but very much for being part of the whole setup here. It's also very inspiring in many ways. Rabbi Kirsch is not new to this game. He's been in it for a few years, but when I was asking him, you know, what are you doing now? And he said, well, I wanted to focus on some new Talmidim, younger Talmidim, other people that are coming up. Very much an epitome, an epitomization, when the Gemara says, if you made Talmidim when you were younger, so you should make Talmidim when you're older, because you never know which Talmidim will turn out for the best. The Rif, who was a Rav in North Africa for all of his life and set up yeshivas in North Africa 1,000 years ago, he was forced to flee to Spain when he was a very old man in those days, in his 70s. All sorts of problems at home, and he had to flee from the non-Jews in Morocco. And he went to Spain, and he said, what am I going to do in Spain? And he set up a yeshiva there, even though he was an old man, very old for those years. He set up a yeshiva there, and the Rav Migash, Rav Yosef Migash, who was the main Talmud that he developed, he became the main connection that the Rav had to the next generations, without any anticipation that that would be the case. I was thinking if the Rav standing on that boat, Rav Yitzchak Alfasi, thinking that's the end of his rabbinic career, it was actually only the beginning. So I wish Rabbi Kirsch a bracha that all his new Talmidim should turn out to be much better than the old Talmidim. And he should go Michael El Chayil, as should you all. Okay, I'm not here to speak for a long time. We have the extreme excitement of having Rebbe St. Esther Hamilton, who I've known for almost as long as Rabbi Kirsch. True story. And I'm very excited to hear what she has to say. She was a very important part of the planning also for the book, as we'll talk about in a minute. So what do I want to talk to you about a little bit? It's not a formal share, and I don't want to try and precede the book in 25 minutes. You're going to have to buy it and read it and see what it says. It's not a quick read. There's a lot there. Maybe I'll give you a little bit of a background as to how I ended up writing or being very much part of this book. You know, Sneers is an important topic, but it's not the only important topic in the world, and it's probably not the most important topic in the world. I have a website which Baruch Hashem, Sarah, my wife here, who also is very much behind this trip, very much behind my website setting it up. Kinanahori, it's got like 500 or so shirim on it, and only three of them are on Sneers. So if you would have asked me 5 years ago, what do you think you're going to write a book on? I would have said probably nothing, and if anything, certainly not this. But I was approached about 3 or 4 years ago by Brocha Polyakov, who is a name that you see very much on the front of the book. She is the inspiration for the book and very much a co-author and editor of the book. And she was a student of mine about 20 years ago in Israel, soon after we moved to Israel. And she approached me and said the following. She's a woman in her mid-30s now with, up-and-coming teenagers going into high school. And she's on a lot of chat groups and WhatsApp groups and email groups with other women. And whenever anyone raises anything connected with Sneers, everybody goes berserk. She said people become hysterical, defensive, angry, aggressive. and the reaction is way disproportionate to anything that has actually been said. And she, as a kind of therapist and social worker, has been noticing this, and she said there's an expression in social work, I learned it from her, that where it's hysterical, then it's historical. Meaning that there's something obviously going on with this. I mean, she obviously went through the Frum School system, and she also had her own experiences with this. And she noticed that a lot of the women, when they're looking for something out there to, as a resource, A, there was very little that people were turning to, and B, they were turning to my three little shirim on my website and saying, why don't you listen to this? This is something a bit different. So she approached me to write up the book and to bring that narrative to a greater public. Why is it something a little bit different? It's not in my source at all. It's in the source of my Rebbe, Rav Yitzchak Berkowitz. Because when we went to Israel, my story is like boring, and well, it's not boring, actually, it's quite interesting, but it's not for now. I used to be a lawyer, Sarah and I used to live in Hendon. We made Aliyah 21, 22 years ago, and I decided to give up being a lawyer and go into learning. I'd been to yeshivas in different places before, but I needed to go to something, you know, much more serious for 5 or 6 years. And one of the places I ended up was actually in the schutz of your husband.
Yes.
Yeah, Esti and Rav Yoni came to us for Shabbos because we obviously knew them very well. They were quite a young married couple. And I said, what are you doing these days? And Rav Yoni was revising. He was learning a source sheet in the schutz of Talmud Torah. So he was learning a source sheet. He said, I'm learning. I'm in Kollel. So I said, oh, let me see what you're learning. And I looked at this source sheet. I remember it as if it was yesterday. I looked at this source sheet and I said, whoa, where is this Kollel? I've got to be in this Kollel. This is amazing, the structure and the layout and the care. He said, oh, it's someone called Rav Yitzchak Berkowitz, and he just started a Kollel. So the next year I joined the Kollel, and it was a Smicha Kollel. We learned all the standard things that you learn in a Smicha Kollel, Shabbos and Kashrus, Taras Mishpacha, etc. But then Rav Berkowitz said, now we're going to learn to the guys in the Kollel in their 20s, early 30s, we're going to learn Sneas. Guys are saying, what? We're going to learn Sneas? Why are we going to learn Sneas? That's not on a standard Kollel syllabus. And he says, well, you guys have got to hear this because it's important for you. Sneas is not just a mitzvah for women. And when I heard, it was only 3 or 4 shiurim, but the presentation of Rav Berkowitz on this topic, this was a life-changing, enriching, inspiring, empowering presentation, which really presented this topic in a way that I'd certainly never thought of it before. And all of us, the guys there in the Kollel, never really thought about anything on this topic before, certainly not in the way that he said it. I was the one that ended up teaching in seminaries in Midrashot, so I was the one that was able to road test this, you know, amongst us, a small but important part of the other shiurim that I was giving over the next 15 or so years. And that's how I ended up, you know, coming to the book, because Bracha Polyakov came to me and said, let's write a book. Now, I said, of course, no, I'm not writing a book about Sneas. I don't want to be the Sneas rabbi. It's too triggering. It's too traumatizing. And no one's going to buy it. No one's going to read it. I certainly don't want to write it. Anyway, she prevailed upon me. It was COVID. She said, okay, it's COVID now. What are you doing sitting on Zoom, working out how to share your screen or whatever? She said, why don't you write a book as well? So I said, okay, let's give it a try and see. Now, Bracha really wanted it to have a lot of women's voices in it, because it's, even though this is a mitzvah for women and men, it's very often women that have the most, if you like, issues and questions and sometimes challenges coming into this topic. So the book, basically, as you'll see it, I don't have one in my hand, but you can get one afterwards. Part one is an anthology of essays, short essays around 3 or 4 pages each, by prominent women, thinkers, influencers, community leaders, educators, of whom Rebbetzin Hamilton is one. But we really wanted to get women from across different communities, not just geographically. We've got Israel, America, England, but also hashgraphically. It was very important that we tried to bring people together in this book. It had to be a book that connected Klal Yisrael rather than divided them, because Sneas is often a very divisive community issue, which we'll come to in a second. So we have women in that book from communities, including the Beit Yaakov community, Becky Zeltzer, who runs an amazing syllabus for 70 Beit Yaakovs in America on Sneas issues. She wrote an essay. We have women from the Yeshivish community, whatever these labels mean to you in different places, which is almost certainly not what they really are, but that's another 15 shirim, not for now. From the Yeshivish community, from the Chabad community, from the Modern Orthodox community in America, from the YU community, from the Orthodox Union, from the Ulpanot in Israel, Oriya Mevorach, who probably you haven't heard of, teaches a lot of these issues. She's a young woman in Israel, in the Hebrew-speaking world, and even in the Ulpanot, in the religious Zionist Ulpanot in Israel, tzniut is still a very challenging, very traumatizing, very very difficult topic. In fact, it is in every school system I've dealt with. Whether you're talking the Beis Yaakov system, the religious Zionist system, the modern Orthodox system, it's challenging in different ways. So we have the women in part one and a few token men. Certainly not token, they're very choshev, men in their own, right. And then part two is a write-up, really, and again, it's a few hundred pages, like 300 or 400 pages in part two, of the sugyas, of the developments of the ideas of tzniut halachically and meta-halachically in terms of how halacha works, and hashkafically. Now, I'm not a posek, I'm not coming to tell everybody to do this or do that or to change what they're doing. And I don't think there's anything particularly revolutionary in terms of, you know, what is the halacha in the Sefer. I constantly send people to their own communities, their own poskim, their own, guides and rebbetzins, etc. What I think is revolutionary, which is Rabbi Yitzchak Berkowitz's structure. And that's what I want to talk about for a little bit today. I want to analyze six challenges and then six suggested structural changes as to how we can view tzniut maybe in a different way, which just gives it much more context, much more breadth, makes it much less challenging in different ways. Now, I'm only a very small part of this, which is one of the important reasons why we've got Rebbetzin Esther here as well, in that this conversation is obviously not just a conversation which is halachic. It's very personal. Tzniut is an issue which really goes to people's self-perception, often their feeling of self-worth. There's a lot of conversations that have to be had between peers, between women and other women. But for what I can add, I think I can add this structure, which hopefully will be helpful to people. So that's enough by way of introduction. Let me give you the 6 points, and you'll hopefully see the book. And then Esther's going to speak a little bit, and then we'll be happy to take questions, etc., etc. Okay, these are the 6 brief points. Clothing. You don't need me to stand up and say to you that tzniut is about more than just clothing. Everybody says that, and it's true. But what people perhaps don't realize is the other part of the tzniut conversation is structured, halachic, focused. It's not just a very kind of fluffy idea about tzniut as, you know, an internal middah, which is very important, by the way, very important. But there's also halachic structure to it too. There's been an enormous overfocus in the area of tzniut on women's clothing and on women's bodies, to the point that it's often asked to me, why is it sanua for a man to even stand up and talk about tzniut? That itself is not sanua. So often the same people who ask that question are the same people who also ask me, and isn't it ridiculous that tzniut is so focused only on women and only on women's clothing? And really one question answers the other question, which is, of course, yes, it's not appropriate for me to stand up and start talking about women and women's clothing, and certainly not to the people themselves. You know, I work in the seminary world. It's absolutely fundamental in every seminary I've ever been involved in that no man will ever make any comment of any kind, negative or certainly not positive, about the way that any woman in the seminary looks or is dressed. That's fundamental. It's a complete lack of tzniut to do that. But tzniut is not just about women. It's about a much broader topic, which we'll talk a little bit about. And therefore, it's totally appropriate for men to be involved, both teaching and learning this idea. We need to understand that tzniut is much deeper. Just to give you a little inkling of what I mean by that, the Torah mitzvah, if I say to you, I mean, you may have read the book already, in which case that's cheating, but if I asked you, where does it say in the Torah there is a mitzvah to be tzanua? Very few people know the answer to that question. If people ask, where is tzniut in Tanakh? So some people will say, Micha, v'atznei alecha sim elokecha. So that's very true. That is definitely one of the main sources in Tanakh. But that can't be a source for a Torah mitzvah. It's in Micha. It's in Navi. So where does it say in the Torah that there is a mitzvah to be tzanua? So the answer is, and this is counted as one of the 613 mitzvot, and you can look it up in the book and all of the details. There's a mitzvah in Dvarim when it's going through the issues of the soldier and the mitzvahs that the Jewish soldier has to keep in the battlefield. There is a mitzvah, there's a specific psukim dedicated to how the soldier uses the bathroom in the battlefield. You have a little shovel and you take it out with you and you dig a little hole and you're in a war situation. There are bombs falling. This is very stressful. But says the Torah, you have to have a place outside the camp which is appropriate. You go there, you dig a hole, you do what you do, you cover it over, because you have to bring, I'll read you the pasuk, the key pasuk here, Ki Hashem Elokecha mithalech bekerev machanecha. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in your machane. And machane here means soldiers' camp, but it's whatever machane we have. Whether it's our home, our family, our workplace, our institution where we learn, where we teach, all of these things, our bedroom, our bathroom, everywhere HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in our machane. Lehatzilcha, God saves you. Who do you think is making the bullet go this way rather than this way? You have to bring Kedusha v'haya machanecha kadosh. You have to make your machane kadosh, says the Smag Sefer Mitzvah. This is the mitzvah to be tzanua. Even in the most private place, even in a stressful environment, where the soldier would say, well, why does it matter how I use the bathroom? I could be dead, God forbid, in 5 minutes. Who cares? This is a stressful situation. The answer is no. You still have to be a mensch. You can't turn around and in the Shulchan Aruch, this is paskind. The mitzvahs of sneers, the halachas of sneers, are paskind in the first, the second, and the third paragraphs, sections of Shulchan Aruch. And it starts with this idea. Al Toma never says a Shulchan Aruch, I'm in a private room. Mira Aini. Who can see me? No one can see me. No one knows what I do here. I can act how I like. That's not okay. You have to have a sense of your own dignity. That is the fundamental Torah mitzvah sneers. Before you even talk about clothing, talk about women or men or what's going on in public, it's a question of whether a person, a Jew, has a sense of their own dignity. And this is a halachic, also a hashkafic idea, but this is the fundamental, if you like. It spreads from there to other things. There's a whole discussion of the sota. Again, that's the next platform. The sota is the paradigm mitzvah for public dignity. Meaning the woman who is a sota is brought in front of the Jewish people in public, and she's put through a lack of dignity. Her hair is uncovered. Her body is uncovered. And from there, you're learning that there is a concept of public dignity through a married woman covering her hair, through a person covering their body, etc. And this is a paradigm, if you like, for other mitzvahs. So these are platforms that are not often spoken about. These ideas of the Torah mitzvah, the sota, and then the ideas of Das Yehudis, which we'll talk about in a couple of minutes, again, in very brief terms. So number one, clothing. We need to get sneers as a discussion which is much broader. Now, of course, yes, it's also about clothing. And of course, women are involved. But it's about much, much more than that. And that's something which I think is a very, you know, an important chinuch conversation with our children, even from a young age. This is how we act, because this is dignified, this is not dignified. Those conversations can come up in whatever wording, you know, relates to the kid in that way, and to ourselves. That's the first question. The second point, dress code versus values. Sneas is almost always presented as a dress code. You wear this and this and this. And this dress is okay and this dress is not. And this shekel is okay and this one is not. And you know, I don't know if you noticed, there was an advert in one of the Jewish papers a few weeks ago. If you're wearing a bag, see this advert? You wear a bag this way, you don't wear a bag that way. You know, you didn't see this. Someone put a lot of money into producing, into paying for an ad, that this is how you're meant to be wearing a, you know, a crossbody bag or whatever it's called. Okay, that's interesting. Okay, if I had a lot of money to put into the Jewish people, I might personally put it into other areas first. But when that kind of a rule comes down, where does that come from? People never present, or hardly ever present, sneers in a way which is source driven. Meaning, if I teach Hilchos Shabbos, Hilchos Kashrus, you teach it as a source driven and underpinned idea. There are psukim, there are gemaras, there are mishnayos, there's rishonim, there's analysis, there's shulchan aruch, there's achronim, there's poskim, there's this tshuva, there's that tshuva. When sneas is taught, it's often just given. These are the rules, as if they came down on Har Sinai. And kids who are listening, and people who are listening, are asking, why is this shaykel okay and this shaykel is not? They're almost exactly the same. And why was this one okay 2 weeks ago and this is not okay now? And why is this one okay in this community, but in this community it's not? And these rabbis look just as from as these rabbis, but they say it's okay, but they say it's not. And if you don't give any context to that, then people start to think, well, you know something, I think these rabbis are just making this thing up. But if they're making that up, they may be making lots of things up. And this actually is corrosive of people's commitment and connection to the halakhic process. So I think the second thing we need to start doing is really teaching a broader understanding of the sources. There are thousands of sources of sneers. They're just never taught in the way that they could be. There are definitely pitfalls to avoid. We don't want to make it into a completely rule-based, halakhically rigid system, as if it's all part of the, in a minute we'll see what kind of halacha that might be. On the other hand, you don't want to turn sneers into something which is just, well, it's how you feel, you know, everything's sanur if you think it's sanur, and if you feel sanur, then you are sanur. Then that's not correct either. This is a real halachic topic. There are red lines, there are halachic issues here. Therefore, the dangers of de-halachifying or over-halachifying are really present in sneers. And what the book tries to do is walk the Geshet Tzar Ma'od. You know, the very narrow bridge, which is trying to avoid the pitfalls on either side. So trying to get away from dress code to teach the values and the underlying sources, a second approach. Thirdly, there are different kinds of halacha. There's some halacha which is objective and some halacha which is subjective or more subjective. Let me tell you what I mean by that. Everyone's familiar with the idea that some halacha is chukim and some halacha is mishpatim. That's introduced even before Sinai, when the Jewish people received the Torah at Marah. So God says he's giving them chukim, chayk, u'mishpat. So we used to understanding, and Rashi brings this, and certainly it's correct, that chukim are more of the mitzvahs that we don't see the underlying reasons for, and mishpatim seem to make more logical sense. That's what they teach you at high school, and that's true. But actually, that's not the only understanding. The Midrash says, for example, on this pasuk of chukim mishpat, the ultimate chayk is Shabbos. Shabbos is a chayk. So you're going to say, what? Shabbos is a chayk? I get Shabbos. There are reasons for Shabbos. It says ki. Ki shesh yishkamim. Asar shem es ha'aretz. Shemaim es ha'aretz. Shabbos doesn't make no sense. Shabbos makes lots of sense. So why is it a chayk? So Rav Berkovitz stressed, coming out of the Maharal, that a chayk means a mitzvah or a set of halachas that is fixed. Chakuk. Chakuk means it's engraved. It never changes. It's completely objective. If the Rambam came to Boreham Wood, I'm sure he'd feel very comfortable here. He'd find a Sephardi minion somewhere, I'm sure, around here. Certainly in Edgeware somewhere, he'd find a Sephardi minion. The point is that if he came to, even in Boreham Wood, he really made it. This room, how about that? I must have picked up the vibe. If the Rambam came to this room to teach his syllabus on Hilchas Shabbos or Hilchas Kashrus from the 12th century in Fostat in Egypt, he could just brush off the syllabus and teach the same thing. Chicken soup is chicken soup. I don't know if he ate chicken soup. Whatever. Milk is milk. If you drop one in the other, it's either kosher or it's not kosher. It doesn't matter who you are, where you live, when you live. A 60th is a 60th. Shabbos is a chayk. Boira is boira. Bishul is bishul. But other halachic areas are mishpatim. Mishpatim are halachas which are more value-driven. Meaning, yes, there are rules, but you need to use, says the Maharal, a lot of seichel. You need a lot of seichel. And if you do, seichel as in common sense and understanding and personal subjective application. And if you don't, you'll get them very, very wrong. Example, kibud av ve'eim. If you treat kibud av ve'eim as a chayk, and you just learn a list of rules, and you say, I'm just going to do this for my parents, you end up in ridiculous scenarios. True story, guy went to yeshiva. He was a recent Baal Tshuva. This is a story I heard from Rav Berkovitz. He was what they call FFT, from Tuesday. Okay? In Monday he wasn't from, Tuesday he was from. And his parents are out of their minds worrying about this kid. They're secular parents living in the States, and he looks weird, and he dresses weird, and he has strings coming out of his trousers, and he talks to himself when he goes to the bathroom. This is not normative behavior. And he's trying to repair connections with his parents. And he learns about kibud av ve'eim. He says, whoa, my parents are going to understand from this mitzvah the Torah is emes. Because I'm going to go back, I'm going to treat them like a true Torah Jew treats his parents. Not like their friends and their friends' children who are not frum. So he goes home, he reads all the books from Kibbutz Av Ve'eim, and one of the books says you have to speak very respectfully to your parents, and the most respectful way to speak is in the third person. So he goes home, he speaks to these regular secular American Jews. Would mother like to sit down? Would father like to drink? And the parents say, what's wrong with you? You're speaking to us like a moron. Like, what? Get out of here. So he goes crying to the Rosh Hashiva. What went wrong? He says, what went wrong is you treated this like chukim, like as if it was Hilchas Shabbos. You can't just read a bunch of rules. You have to think, who are your parents? How do they want to be respected? How does this work with you? The laws of marriage, mishpatim. If the Rambam came to teach the laws of marriage, he couldn't just stand up and teach what he taught in 1170. Oh, you have four wives, and one is 11, and one is 19, and one is 23, and one is... I'm sorry, Rav Moshe, you can't teach that anymore. Why not? Because times have changed. What? Halacha doesn't change. No, halacha doesn't change, but mishpatim apply differently. Snias is mishpatim. You can't treat it like chokim. Somebody said to me, or I read somewhere, I think someone even said to me, well, I don't understand. If you measure your matzahs, why don't you measure your sleeves? The answer is, yeah, there may be measurements for sleeves, but you don't measure them like matzahs. You don't have like a little laminated sheet and it's like, you know, this much is kazayis. It's not the right, meaning you're thinking the wrong way. It's not the right kind of halachic framework, and therefore you're always going to make a mistake to understand how that works. And in terms of sneers, this is very important, and I can't get into this in detail now, but a significant part of the sneers framework is Das Yehudis, meaning Chazal understood that you can't create fixed rules that apply in all times and all places as to how people dress and behave. What isn't sanua. And therefore they gave a list of basic red lines, which they call Das Yehudis, which is specifically with women, although maybe it relates to men as well, that a woman will lose her ksubah if she flirts with all the guys, if she uncovers her arms, if she doesn't cover her hair properly, etc. But then the Rambam Rashi says, Sneas Das Yehudis equals sneas, they say, which are the minhagim of Bnois Yisrael, the minhagim of Jewish women, even though they don't have written sources, because minhagim don't have written sources. That's the whole point, that minhagim, they come from the people. And therefore, the details, the rules of sneas are very societally based. If women in a specific community feel that this is the way that it is dignified for them to dress, let's say in the yeshivish community that they want to wear tights, and they feel that they're going out wearing tights is a more dignified sanua way of dressing, so that becomes a Das Yehudis. What do tights achieve? They don't cover anything. How many? I wish I had a pound for it. A number of times girls have asked me, women have asked me, I don't understand why you would wear tights. They're see-through. You can't wear see-through things to cover things. What if I wore one big tights all over my whole body? Does that work? The answer is no. It's not meant to be opaque. You're allowed to see. Well, if you're allowed to see through it, then what does it achieve? No, you just misunderstood. It's not there to stop you seeing something. It's there for you to look dignified. And if the women in that community choose this, in another community they choose that, and another that. And of course, this leads to the question, well, what is my community? It's very complicated. It's not minhag hamakom anymore, because it's not the place. You go, what is the minhag hamakom in London? What's a silly question? How many different communities are there here? It's all about who you associate with, and that becomes difficult because, like, on Monday I'm this, and when I go to school I'm this, and when I go to shul I'm that, and when I go out for dinner I'm this, and when I go to the gym I'm this. And people are very complicated, and that's one of the things the book does to try and break that down and understand how that works. Okay, I could talk in more depth, but I don't want to. Esti is going to speak, and it's important that we hear what she says. So that's an important point, the ideas of objective, subjective halakha, understanding how it works. The last three points are more straightforward. Men are clueless. Okay? I could just stop there. Okay? Men are clueless about sneers. They are, completely. Because they assume this is a woman's mitzvah. I heard this morning on a podcast, Brocha gave a podcast, Brocha Polyakov, and she said that when in the bookstore she went to, she saw the book there, and it was on the front because they're selling the book, and they said, don't worry, we'll soon be putting it in the Ezra's Nashim. In the bookshop. I mean, there's the Ezra's Noshim, where all the women books go, you know? So you can imagine it's going to be there with all the other, whatever you think women books means or whatever. Sneers is not a woman's book. Sneers, this is why we called it Reclaiming Dignity, a guide to sneer for men and women. Because when you look at the halachas, they are clearly paskened for men as well as women. When Chazal talk about sneers, they talk about men and women. They talk about Kimchis, who, the Gemara in Yuma, she was so dignified that the hair of her head never, the beams of her house never saw the hair of her head. She was very put together. There's a parallel Gemara, says exactly the same thing about Rabbi Yose. He said, Sanua, that the beams of his house never saw him looking, you know, inappropriate, etc. Very, very important ideas that apply to men and to women. Therefore, we need to broaden this situation, this conversation, very much to women, to men, engage people in real discussions about sneers. I went to a Rosh Yeshiva and said to him, I'd like to come and speak about my book in your yeshiva. This is what I call a very enlightened Rosh Yeshiva. I don't know exactly what that means, but I think you know what I'm talking about. He looked at me like, why would you come and talk about sneers? Are you going to tell my guys what they should wear on the beach? And I said, well, no, not specifically, it might come up in conversation, but it is about much more than that. And he clearly understood sneers that he thought applied to women. He just applied it to men, And so what else is there to say? So we've got a lot of education to do here. A lot of education. A lot of women have actually mentioned, as I've been researching this, that they're not particularly happy with the way that a lot of men dress. And the kind of trousers that they wear and the kind of behavior that they have. There was a campaign in Israel last summer called Mitza Boxerim, campaign boxer shorts. Okay, what was that? A group of religious Zionist frum young women basically went public and they said, enough is enough. We're frum girls, we go hiking in the forest in the summer, and it's very appropriate, and we dress appropriately, it's very hot in the summer. And then when we get to like a pool or a mayan, there's these mayans, you know, the mayanot in the forest, these, what do you call them, springs. So all these yeshiva guys, these are guys from yeshivas, these are not spam secular guys. They come, they strip off down to their boxer shorts, and they're jumping in and splashing around, oblivious to the women around them, etc. Oblivious to their own sniut, and they're saying, enough is enough. Why don't these guys have any clue about what is and isn't sanua for them? And I'm sure these are great guys. You just never entered their head. So there's a lot to do there, and we'd like to try and do that as well. Last two points. These are more technical, or one of them is, but they're very important. There's a lot of confusion between snias and erva. A lot of confusion. Snias is a discussion which treats a person as a subject, bringing HaKadosh Baruch Hu into their machaneh. That's the posik. How can I invite Hashem into my life and own the way I act in different situations? And this is the opening of Shulchan Aruch with the Ramah, the way you act in the bedroom, the way you act in the bathroom, etc. The Gemara says there was a funeral. The Gemara in Brachas in Samach Dalet. There was a funeral. Someone stood up and gave a hesped, an eulogy. And the guy said that the man they were burying was such a great person. He was so tsanua. He was so tsanua. Rav Nachman went up to him afterwards and said, you don't know if he was tsanua. Oh no, he was always, you know, you don't know if he was tsanua until you went to the toilet with him. See how he acts when no one else is there. Then you'll know if he was tsanua. Sniyut treats you as a subject, inviting Hashem into your world. Erva, halachically, treats men and women as an object, how we affect other people's halachic behavior. If somebody is not fully dressed, then there are people who may be watching them or looking at them who cannot say brachas, cannot say shema, cannot daven, cannot say shem Hashem. But is that person sanua, a person who's not fully dressed? I don't know. Depends on the context. What if someone's taking a shower? What do they wear in the shower? Well, nothing. That's what you're meant to wear in the shower. Is that sanua? 100%, of course. It's exactly how you're meant to be dressed right at that moment. Is there any erva showing? Of course there is. Can people daven when they're... No. Why? Find someone else to daven. Yeah? The point there is that there's complete sniut there, but there's a real erva issue. They're two different issues. And when people start teaching sniut by focusing on erva, they objectify usually the women that they're teaching, and they make the women feel that they're being basically treated as halachic objects, which then plays into the whole lifnei iver discussion, which is also treated in the book, which is everybody has an obligation, bein adam lechaveiro, between people and interpersonal mitzvah, not to cause others to stumble, to make bad decisions, to make bad halachic choices. We have that obligation to all Jews and non-Jews. Lifnei iver. Okay? So tznius is often taught to women that you have an obligation to stop men from exploding. Because men are basically undetonated bombs waiting to go off. And they're going to look at you and you're going to be wearing the right thing and there goes another one. Okay, and all these guys are going to be going off everywhere, and you're responsible for that. Now, of course, we're all responsible for the way that our actions affect other people. It would be incredibly inconsiderate to not think of that. It is a Torah mitzvah, but men have responsibility for what they look at. That's not the women's responsibility. It's their responsibility. This week's parsha, Lo Yisasuru Achrei Levavchem VaAchrei Einechem. The Gemara says that if a man looks at a woman's little finger inappropriately, sexually, then that's a serious aveira for him. She has no obligation to cover up her little finger. None, to stop the man from doing that. So getting that balance right is a very important part of this discussion. So snias and erva are connected, yes, complicated halachic connection, and there's a lot to talk about, not now, but don't confuse them. Understand them as different, and then you won't teach the topic incorrectly. And finally, and this is a very important point, snias is often weaponized as a way to judge other people, to delegitimize other communities. And even in a more enlightened conversation about sneers. I hear people all the time talking about different communities have different standards. That, I mean, maybe I've become more American over the years, but that kind of triggers me a little bit, that standards question. Because the minute you say standards, you're implying better, middle, and lower. And of course, there are people who keep halacha more seriously, and there are people who keep halacha less seriously, and there is a mitzvah not to judge anybody else because you've never been in their situation, obviously. But that's not meant to be the focus of tzniyas, to delegitimize other people. And it often is. Now, of course, you can do your halachic, religious one-upmanship in other areas as well. You can say, well, I won't carry under the eruv that everyone else uses, or I won't eat the heksher that everyone else eats. And there are legitimate reasons, don't get me wrong, for chumrah in different areas of mitzvahs. Yes, sometimes it's appropriate. But using tzniyas to weaponize it against other communities is really bad. And you see that the people do this all the time. I can't dress like that. I'll look to ... fill in the word of like negative word about someone else's community that you want. I look to yeshivish, I look to modern, I look to Beis Yaakov, I look whatever you think, you know. That's got to stop. That's a really important problem that we need to stop, which is one of the reasons why the book focuses on Bein Adam L'Chaveiro in terms of its connection with sneers. The way we talk to other people about it, the way we address it with other people, the sensitivities that we need. Because as I said at the beginning, and I'm sure Rebbe Hamilton will talk about this, this is an issue that really affects people very personally. People are less concerned about what you think about their Shatner's observance. At the end of the day, if you say to them, well, didn't you know that might be Shatner's, then they're not going to take that home and really carry it for decades with them, probably. But with sneers conversations, they really, really will. And people are really hurt by these things, and we've got to work out a way to stop that. So that's just a very brief overview of six areas. I'll just recap and tell you what they were again. Number one, an over-focus on clothing and the need to broaden the mitzvah and understand its depth and its other sources. Number two, an over-focus on dress code. It's easier to teach dress code than it is to teach values and subtleties and sensitivities. So people tend to focus on the dress code angle. Number three, a misunderstanding of what kind of a halacha we're talking about. Yes, halacha is objective. Absolutely, there are red lines. But some halacha is entirely objective. Another halacha is much more subjective, and you have to get it right. We talked about that. Fourthly, bringing men into the discussion, which is critical. Fifthly, a distinction between erva and sneers, understanding the difference between them. I'll give you just a little example, just to digress for a second. People get very fixated about this tefach thing, you know? Well, I've got a tefach. There's a tefach rule. You know, some kind of tefach rule. Like, people think there's always like an 18-minute rule in halacha. Well, haven't I got 18 minutes? No, that's not how it works, okay? But a tefach rule. Meaning, as long as I'm within a tefach of where I'm aiming for, then that's good enough. So that's a misunderstanding. Because tefach is a concept in Hilchas Erva. If more than a tefach or less than a tefach is showing, that affects other people's ability to daven. But there's no halacha anywhere that you can open up a little hole as long as it's less than a tefach. You know? That's not how it works. No source for that. It's just a misunderstanding. And in the other direction, people have said things to me like, "Yo, I understand that I can't wear a swimsuit on a mixed beach because, you know, it's lifnei iver, it's erva, etc. But surely it's fine if all the men are non-Jews. Because they don't have a mitzvah of Shmiras Einayim. Like a Gemara cup. Everyone has a Gemara cup. If they don't have a mitzvah Shmiras Einayim, they can look at any, then I'm not going to..." Really? That's how you think? That it's okay to wear it? And people really have asked me this as a really serious shaila. It's a real misunderstanding of what's going on. And finally, the delegitimization point, to try and really do what we can to stop that, to bring communities together and not judge other people. At the same time as upholding standards, I use the word standards, we have to have halachic standards, but we can't judge other people on those. So there's a lot there, and probably spoke for too long, but I wanted to set that out there. I think that Robertson Hamilton is going to talk about other things, and then I think we'll be very happy to answer questions or whatever. Okay, so far so good. Hopefully.
Hi everybody, my name is Esty Hamilton. I have been a speaker for like 20 years and I'm the most nervous I've ever been. I am the typical Beis Yaakov girl who has had her fair share of PTSD around sneers, and I never ever wanted to be the sneers police, mainly because as a teenager, I was a teenager and I was just like, and when I grew up, that my goal in life wasn't ever to be the Tznius police in any way. And it's so interesting because about a year ago, there's a podcast called Headlines. And it's like one of the most popular Haredi podcasts, like 100,000 people, mostly in America, listen to it. And I got contacted by them and I had never heard of them, embarrassingly enough. And they're like, yeah, we're doing a talk on Tznius. Would you like to, we'd really like your opinion. I'm like, how do you even know I exist? Who are you? Why would you think that I would want to talk about Tznius? But I felt very strongly, and they said, no, we want you to talk about how badly it's taught in all the schools. And why do all the girls who leave Beis Yaakov say, I don't want to ever hear any more talk about Tznius ever again in my whole life, and no one's ever allowed to speak to me about it ever again. That's what we want to talk about. I'm like, great, yes, I'll talk about that. That's fine. And I didn't realize how many people listen to it. And like a month, you know, they record everything in advance, and then suddenly it comes out, and you don't know when it's coming out. And suddenly people were stopping me in the street. I just heard your podcast or Headlines. That was amazing. That was brilliant. And it was just very interesting for me because, again, I don't see, when I think Tznius, I think of the woman in school who taught me Tznius. It was just so terrible. Everything she wore and everything she said. And I don't know. I'm just like, have I become her? Like, that would have been my nightmare. And and then Rabbi Manning's like, Esti, I'm writing a book on Tznius. Do you want to write an essay? I'm like, really, me on Tznius?
We invited
her. literally, it's like such a trigger. So if I'm triggering any of you, just standing here is triggering for me. I remember I grew up in London. I went to the Beis Yaakov here. And after I got married, I lived in Eretz Yisrael with my husband for 10 years, and he went to Rebbe Fritz's Kollel, and he taught there, and I taught in many seminaries. I didn't ever teach Tznius. And when I came back, so I got in touch with a lot of my old school friends, who half of them don't dress tzanua, some of them don't cover their hair, and they were with me in Beis Yaakov, who got the same education with me. And one of the women I was speaking to, I was interested, she does dress tzanua, and I was interested, and I said, you know, let's say her name is Sarah. I said, Sarah, you know, like, you know, I'm about to write an article for a book about Tznius. What was your experience in school? And she said to me, my teachers only ever cared about my skirts. They didn't care about any other mitzvahs I ever did. That was really bottom line. And I have to say that is a very shared experience among every single woman that I've met, definitely in the frumah school systems, that nobody cared about their mitzvahs that they did. They only cared if their skirt was long enough. And therefore, that is pretty traumatizing. You take a whole, you know, take a whole section of Klal Yisrael, a whole group of women, and you say, nothing matters except if your skirt is long enough. Nothing matters, not your chesed, not your tefillah, not your, you know, not your shmiras mitzvahs, of everything, not your Shabbos, not your kashrus, nothing matters except the length of your skirt. And it's such a chaval. And even more than that, and it's something that Rabbi Manning mentioned, but I'd like to expound on it a little bit, you know, it's kind of like, and then if you're not tzanua and you cause another man to chas v'shalom sin, you're in trouble. So I want to first explain very precisely that nobody can ever blame anybody else for their actions. And we know this from Bereishis, when Adam Arishan, when Hashem says to Adam, what did you just do? And not only did he blame Chava, he blamed Hashem. It was the woman that you gave me who made me eat from this apple. You know what Hashem said? You're going to be punished and she's going to be punished and you're both going to be punished because every single human being is responsible for their own actions. And there's no Beis Din ever who would ever hold up any man who came in, well, I didn't mean to do it. It's her. She made me do it. There is nothing, there's no halachic standpoint. That means you can't be responsible for anybody else's averis. You can only be responsible for your own averis, and anybody who's ever told you otherwise is just lying to you. It's just not true. So now that we've debunked all those things, I think that it's very important to talk about, and it's something that I speak about a lot in my tefillah classes, about changing the narrative a little bit about our body and our soul. And we always say, you know, I am a body and I have a soul. And I always taught the girls in the seminaries, I said, that's the wrong way to say it. You have to say, I am a soul and I have a body. Not I am a body and I have a soul. But rather, I am a soul and I have a body. I relegate the body to secondary importance because really, I am a soul. I'm a soul. And I'm a soul, that means, you know, And I can prove it to you. If, let's say, chas v'sharam, somebody got very sick and they lost all their hair, or let's say they had to have a limb removed or something, would they be any less of who they are? No. I'm Esty with or without my hair. I'm Esty with or without any other part of me. Why? Because my body is really the clothing of my soul, and I am a soul first. And I happen to have a body, like I have dresses in my cupboards. I also have a body. And the message that of Yiddishkeit in general is really to develop the soul over the body. To develop the soul over the body and the internal world over the external world. And to be obsessed with perfecting your soul and not so much with perfecting your body. And the world that we live in today are obsessed with perfecting the body. Obsessed. Everywhere you go, everyone's telling you another way you can perfect your body, whether it's these kind of exercise or that kind of food or that kind of diet or this kind of nutrition or that kind of whatever, it doesn't matter, or 7 minute, or download this app and you'll be right. And it's all about your body perfect, obsessed with perfecting the body. And nobody cares less about their soul. Nobody's obsessed with perfecting their soul. In fact, I have a whole load of shirim on Torah New Time of Mesillas Yesharim. And the Mesillas Yesharim is actually all about a ladder of spiritual growth. And it's only talking about being obsessed with perfecting your soul. Nothing to do with your body. Your body is almost irrelevant. Why am I looking after my body? Why am I eating healthy? Why am I doing exercises? Why am I doing why? Because I need my body in order to do the mitzvahs. And I don't know if you know this, but a few years ago, I suddenly got very, very sick. And I was rushed to hospital. I almost died. I had a miraculous recovery. That's another share for another time. But I remember feeling, I really, one night, they called up my husband in the middle of the night and they said, we think she only has a few hours left to live. And he started writing my hesped, my own husband. That's what he started doing, writing my own eulogy. I was that sick. And I remember feeling, as I was lying in my bed, like I couldn't move. I remember getting out of bed and walking to the toilet was such an exhausting event that when I'd come back, I'd sleep for 2-3 hours because it was so exhausting just to use the toilet. That's how weak I was and that's how sick I was. And I remember feeling so strongly that my body was betraying me because I needed my body to do the things I wanted to do in this world, and my body is betraying me. And how can this be? Because my soul really wanted to live and my body is having like a nervous breakdown. And I felt that separation really because I felt like my soul was very, very strong and my body was very, very weak. And this is how, the way that we can really change the conversation around tznius is really for women, I think, is to change the conversation and live in exactly the opposite way that the world is trying to make us live, right? To not get sucked into that. And therefore we have to work much harder not to get sucked in, because we are all sucked in, and I'm right there with you, okay? I also want, you know, look at all these women like, oh, how do I, you know, I wouldn't look like that. How can I look like that, right? And really, the Torah says, you are a soul. It doesn't matter about your body. Your body is all genetics. If you're short, because your mother's short, if you're big-boned, if you're small-boned, if you're tall, I always wanted to be taller. And I, you know, stopped growing at 5'2", and I was always so annoyed about that. Because why? Because supermodels are all like 5'11", right? Or six, and that must be beautiful. So how can I be beautiful if I'm like short, you know? And all these things are such nonsense, and yet we've been sucked in. And we kind of, what I really want the discussion to change is not, you know, the whole idea of dressing tzanua. I taught a lot in Jewel when I was in Eretz Israel. And I remember it was boiling hot in Israel and I'm sitting outside with these 10 women in Jewel. None of them are from, they're all sitting there in like, you know, the spaghetti straps and the short. And it's boiling hot and I'm sitting there dressed like I'm right now. And then I asked them a question. I'm like, don't you get distracted by your own body? Forget everybody else. You're now sitting in my class, but you're half naked. Are you not distracted? Like, how are you learning in the state of dress that you are? And then we had the whole discussion about how it's true every time they pass any kind of pane of glass that's any mirror-like. So that door's a bit mirror-like, you know, every time they pass a shop front, they're always readjusting what they're wearing the whole time because they're always thinking, how does my body look now? How does my body look now? How does my body look now? And the whole day, that's all they're thinking. If your whole, it's a little bit like, I have a friend who attends Overeaters Anonymous and has done for many, many years. And she says, I was asking her to describe to me, what does it feel like to be part of that kind of group of people? Like, what are you healing from? She said, Esther, you don't understand. I think about food from the moment I wake up. I plan what I'm having for breakfast. I plan what I'm having for lunch. I plan what I'm having for supper. I think about how delicious that chicken's going to be. I wonder, like, what biscuit am I going to eat? She said, being part, it's not that we eat too much. It's that the only thing we can think about is food. And then I spoke to a friend of mine who spent quite a long time in an anorexic, in a home for people who suffer from anorexia. I actually did a live with her on Instagram, and she's very open about her anorexic journey, and it's 10 years later, she's still struggling with it. And she told me the same thing. All she thinks about all day is food. All she thinks about all day is food. And I think to myself, if that's all you're thinking about, how is there any room for anything real? How's there room for relationships? How's there room for children? How's there room for, I don't know, any kind of deep thought? How is there room for relationship with Hashem? If when I'm standing and davening, all I'm thinking about is food, how is there room for anything else in my mind? And this is what I really think about tznius. I think, you know, everybody's saying, and how will people perceive you, and how will people look at you, and you're distracting men, and you're, like, forget everybody else. Think about yourself. Like, everybody's got that one dress in the cupboard that when you wear it, you're uncomfortable the whole time that you're wearing it. You know what I'm talking about? It's just a little bit too tight, but you really want to wear it because it's very cute. And you spent all day doing this, all day. I remember once going to shul on a yontif, and I was wearing that dress, and I couldn't daven properly. I couldn't think of anything. It's like, hold your stomach in, Esty. Don't breathe. Don't breathe. I wonder if it looks good sitting down. Maybe I should stand the entire time. What am I doing? I couldn't daven for that whole morning. I can't do anything in my life if all I'm thinking about is my body. I cannot at all uncover my soul. I can't be connected to my soul in any way. If my whole life, and by the way, every message you're going to hear on social media and anything, any magazine you read, is all going to be about the body perfect. And so a little bit what I feel is that it's a very good idea to shut that down. It's a very good idea to get rid of that dress. I finally gave that dress away to charity after holding on to it for like 10 years. You know, it's like, usually it's your Sheva Brochas dress or something that you bought once when you lost 5 pounds for 5 seconds. Okay, and so then I finally gave away that dress. Why? Because I felt sorry for myself. Because I thought to myself, when I wear that, I can be nobody else. I can just be this dress. What kind of person am I? What kind of person am I becoming? Who do I want to be? Who do I want to be in 5 years' time, in 10 years' time, in 15 years' time? I was once teaching a whole bunch of teenage girls, and I said, imagine you're married to your husband for like 20 years. It's your 20th wedding anniversary. And you get a card from your husband, you know, says on it, my darling wife, you know, and you open it and you go, Esty, you're the love of my life. You know, I love you so much. You have such great legs. Thanks for being my wife for 20 years. You'd be like, what? That's all you think? Even if you do have great legs, that's what you think of me? We've been married 20 years. You can't say anything about who I am. You can't say anything nice about the person who I am, because that counts much more. It counts much more. You know, they say animals don't wear any clothes. Why? Because what you see is what you get. Right? They are exactly who they are. They can't hold back on their urges. They don't have any thought processes. They're just survival of the fittest. Literally, if you ever watch David Attenborough, which I do a lot with my kids, it's horrifying and terrifying. Like, if you're an animal, it's really survival of the fittest, right? And yet we live in a world where they've made all of us into those animals, all of us women. And I reject it, 150% of it. I say no thank you. Do I want to look pretty? Yes. Do I want to think about what I'm wearing and what I look like every day, all day, every moment of the day? Are you joking? I have so many other things much better to do. And who do I want to be in 20 years' time? Not a person who's so concerned about what she's wearing that she hasn't had any other thought for 20 years. That I cannot daven without kavana, that I cannot do any other mitzvahs, that I cannot be a person, that I can't be present in the moment. And it has become part of our you know, part of the way we speak and part of the way we think about ourselves. And when you stand in the mirror, are you distracting yourself from your own life and from your own personhood? And I also think something else about women, which Rabbi Manning, even if he knew this, he couldn't even say it, so I'd like to say it. And that is this, and maybe you'll all hate me. I think often, women are looking for the cheap attention instead of the expensive respect. because attention is very cheap. You can walk down the road and look a certain way and you'll get wolf whistled, you'll get catcalled, somebody will say, you look so, whatever, yeah? And you'll feel maybe, oh, I've made it. I feel actually gross when that happens. But I'm saying, let's say you feel, I've made it, yeah? And that's some kind of attention. And every single person wants to feel valued. Every single person wants to feel somebody notices me. And perhaps the underlying disease of all of this is that we all really want somebody to notice us. And it's true for everyone. Our kids, when we don't notice them, what do? They misbehave. They go for the negative attention. Why? Because negative attention is better than no attention at all. Because every person wants to feel significant. Every person wants to feel I make a difference. People notice that I'm here. I add value. Every single person wants to feel this way. Women especially. Men always feel that they have it because they have this huge ego. They feel like everybody's always giving me attention. I'm the best guy around. Women is like, really? I don't feel like I'm worthy. Sorry, Rabbi Manning. Except for Rabbi Manning, who wrote the book on CS. So it's not Rabbi. All present company accepted. Never. Never. The only man in the room. Okay. So what happens is that because we all want to feel significant and we all want to feel valued, women know they can get their attention like this. I don't feel valued today. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to put on a pretty dress and go down the street. Then my collet man will say hi to me. I'll get that cheap attention that I need. Can I tell you something? Women, businesswomen, women who are very high up in their company, women who own companies, do you know how they get dressed when they go to work? No, they don't. Really, the CEOs of their companies, the businessmen, they don't wear any revealing clothes ever. Do you know why? You ask them why. They say, oh, I want to be taken seriously. I want to be taken seriously. I'm going to be covering up totally. Because when I'm sitting in a meeting, I want everyone to take me seriously. This is the expensive respect. They don't want the cheap attention. They know they're worth more than that. Why do we not know that we're worth more than that? Why do you not know that you're worth more than that? Every woman, the secret of being a woman is that every woman can make themselves stunningly beautiful. Every woman, she tries for 5 minutes, she can make herself beautiful. Every single woman. And there'll be a guy out there who'll give you the cheap attention. But ask yourself, why am I doing that? Why am I doing that? It's because I'm looking for the cheap attention. Why am I not going for the expensive respect? Why am I not doing that? Why am I a body first and not a soul first and nothing to do with anyone else? I feel that the tsnius conversation has drifted into all that, like how other people see you and what other communities think of you and what men are looking at. And just take a step back and stand in front of your own mirror and say, who am I? Right? Who am I? Who do I want to be? Where do I want to go? What kind of attention do I want? I want to be a valued member of the community. I want to add value here. I want people to see me as the person who I am. And, you know, I want to emphasize always that there is more to me than just what you look at. There's more to me. And therefore, I won't give you so much to look at. Because I value me. And this is really what I feel that there is, like, we've drifted so far away from that we need Rabbi Manning to write us a book on tsnius. It's embarrassing. I think it's embarrassing. And that's why I'm really happy that the first 150 pages of the book are all women writing about tsnius. You have to tell me I'm valuable? Are we always waiting for a man to tell us that we're valuable? Is not the fact that we exist in this world and that Hashem created us enough that we are valuable? And it is something that I think that we've drifted so far away from. And just like Rabbi Manning said, like, good intentions don't get a person anywhere. Like you said, you know, if somebody says, I feel very tsanua. I remember Rebbetzin Hella Gottlieb. She's, you know, one of my big Rebbetzins who I speak to a lot. And she's like, you know, it's like sitting in your house and saying, I feel really sorry for the homeless people. And then you watch a documentary about homeless people and you cry. And then you walk past a homeless person in the street and you totally ignore them. And she goes, so you're not a compassionate person. You're just a curious person. That's what you are. You've learned a lot about them. But if you want to actually be a compassionate person, go buy them a sandwich in the Starbucks. Ask them how they're doing. Say good morning to them, right? Because good intentions don't make you the person that you are. And therefore, we have to make sure that all our actions are aligned with our ideals. And when Rabbi Manning talks about Das Yehudis, Das Yehudis, I think, is loosely translated as a Jewish way to be. When somebody looks at you, they say, there is a Jewish woman. That's Das Yehudis. Do you look like a Jewish woman? Or do you look like somebody who's really trying to look like you are a secular or a Goyisha woman with like a few added extras to cover up some bits? Because we Jewish women are an awesome club. I'm so proud to be a Jewish woman. I'm so proud to be with loads of Jewish women. I think we're enormously powerful. And we know that the Jewish women have been the moral compass of all the Jewish people for thousands of years. It's written in the Torah. Who had their Munna in Mitzrayim? The women. Who had their Munna by Har Sinai? The women. Let's just go through the Jewish history of all the women. We are the moral compass of the Jewish people, and we have lost our way. That's what's happening. And so tzniyus is actually a symptom of something much larger, I think. And I think that we have to align ourselves more with our spiritual essence, because as people, we intuitively understand other people. What's so powerful about a woman? You know, they say that the reason why women are the light the Shabbos candles and Erev Shabbos and not the men, one of the reasons given, is because women understand how to light up every neshama in their family. Women have the unique bina to what? See a situation and understand it for what it really is. I'll give you an example. My son came home from school. I could see immediately on his face something happened. And he like goes up to his little sister and punches her in the face. So I think if my husband was home, he would immediately send my son to his room, punished him, whatever, whatever, and comforted my daughter. And I turned around to him, I said, what happened in school? This is not normally your behavior. What happened? Because hurt people hurt people. And I understood that this scene that I just looked at is actually much deeper. Very deep. And I want to understand the depth. I'm not going to judge just on the surface. I want to know the depth. We women are very deep. And we can really empower and light up the souls around us. But do you know what we can also do? With this depth, with this ability, we can also manipulate every single person around us. It comes from exactly the same koach. And lots of women manipulate through dress, but through everything. And I think that it's true that women have been objectified. You could just look at the beauty pageants of the last 30, 40, 50 years to know that women have been objectified, right? And we have let ourselves be objectified. And that's much sadder. That's much sadder. So I think that the conversation about tznius and about saying, I am a soul and I have a body. I'm going to take my body and make it one step further away from me. It's not my be-all and not my end-all. It's just my body. And it helps me do all the things that I want to do in the world. But if I spend my whole life just thinking about my body and which dress it looks good in, I have failed myself. I've disappointed myself. I have, you know, it's the most painful thing. It's just, and people who are anorexic or people who are Overeat Anonymous, they are in pain every second of every moment of every day. Because they live in a body that tortures them. Because they have absorbed it to the extreme degree. They absorbed the culture that's around us. So I think that the conversation of tznius and the trauma that often lots of people talk about as growing up, tznius, I think that to be don the kafs achus, all the women that's ever shouted at you about tznius, to be don the kafs achus, the one time somebody spoke nicely to me about tznius, and I have to share this experience with you, because when I came home, my parents almost fell on the floor. Okay, so I was about 12 or 13 years old, and at that time, everybody wore suits for Shabbos. Do you remember those suits? Nobody's my age. Okay, so yeah, you remember, right? You wore suits for Shabbos, with shoulder pads and like suits, right? And the suit, the skirt was knee length, and there was a little slit, yeah? And I wore the suit. This was my Shabbos dress. I walked down the street. I'll even say the name of the person, because Zohar Latoiv, don't even know if she's still alive. We had somebody called Family Bondi living on our street. We lived on Prince Park Avenue. And I walked down the street and Mrs. Bondi's standing outside her front door. And she goes to me, Esty. And I knew her growing, like I've lived on that street already for 10 years. Esty, she says to me, and she puts her arms around me. She goes, I love you so much. You know about that slit in your skirt. Would you mind terribly if I sewed it up for you? Just drop it off to me after Shabbos and I'll sew it up for you. Because, you know, you're such a mechubad person. And it just hurts me. Just let me do that for you. So that Motzei Shabbos, I took my skirt to Mrs. Bondi and she sewed up my slit. Now, I was a very angry, rebellious, typical teenage girl. And my parents, you know, are trying to like, if that's not Daniel and this not Daniel, I'm like, oh, what do you know? You're such old people. I don't know anything about what I want to wear, right? And then Mrs. Bondi was, I think, the only positive experience that I experienced growing up about around modesty, because everybody else just yelled, yeah? She made me feel like, wow, Esty, you're such a holy, special person. It's just, it pains me. Let me do this for you. Can I do this for you? It'd be like an honor for me. That's how tznius should be taught. That's how it should really feel. I'm so mechubad that I wouldn't wear that. You think that you see me like that? Wow. Maybe I can start seeing myself in that way. That's really the experience of CS that we're supposed to. And they're like, what did Mrs. Bondi tell you? You know, what was her secret? We need some of the secret, right? Because every parent struggles with their teenagers, right? But really, there's a secret to it. And what's the secret? The secret is to make the person feel like you are a holy human being. You're holy. You're much more than what you see. What you see is not what you get, right? Okay, I'm going to stop talking now because we're going to take questions. Thank you so much for inviting me. Thank you, Rabbi Manning, for inviting me. Very late. You want to stand up here with me and we'll take questions.
Okay. I think there'll be some time for dessert as well. Dessert's not going to go anywhere. But if anyone's interested in asking questions for 10 minutes, do you think that's good, 10 minutes?
Yes.
10 minutes of questions, okay. Or something like that? Do you want to sit down?
No, it's fine, fine. Okay, I'll stand, yeah.
So, okay, fine. So you can put a question to anybody or we can both answer it or whatever you like. Or you can just eat dessert. Yeah, that's good.
I have just a very straightforward question. I think your watch is very interesting. Is there anything in the book about... teaching
CS
to
the
next generation?
So yes, first of all, there is one of the essays deals with this in some depth. Yochef Debo, who has written a book, Dr. Yochef Debo, on sexuality generally, but also on these issues, has even played out certain conversations that you can even adapt or adopt in different ways. Obviously, chinuch is, the book is not about chinuch, but the book is about helping people to internalize the topic so that they can frame the conversations in maybe a different way. Somebody said to Brocha Polikov said to me, somebody rang her up and said, oh, marvelous, there's a book. I'll buy it for bat mitzvah girls and give it to them. And I said, you can't do that. This book is not to be given to bat mitzvah girls. It's for the parents to read.
Oh.
Or an intelligent older teen, yes. And then they can frame those conversations. But there are lots of good resources out there on chinuch. They just all have to
be written. Isn't one of the women who wrote an essay run the Pninim program in America?
Correct.
Which there is a program in America called Pninim, and it's specifically like a laid out syllabus for you to teach teenage girls in schools about tznius. I don't know if any of you know this, but me and my family, we are relocating to America in the summer. I've been asked to be the principal of a high school in Miami. And so we're moving to Miami, and actually I'm in charge of now lots of different things, and one of it's the syllabus. And they told me in this school's like a menorah high school, and they told me in this school they rolled out this program last year, and it's been a really big success because it's much more talking about tznius, and it's not about, like Rabbi Manning says, like about the inches and about the measurements, and about, it's really talking like where does the whole idea of modesty come from, and lots of role playing and lots of discussion around it, and they said this, the girls really enjoying it. So I think that's a really good resource.
Yes.
From head to toe and act a certain way and go on the streets and you still get like more visual. right?
Yes.
And then it's like, well, hold on a minute. I'm covered in every way. I'm acting like the right way. And then you still get that. So it's like, what thought process are you supposed to think when that happens when you're walking in the street and the community that you're a part of? And I don't know if I'm making sense, but I feel like these are the struggles I feel like so many people are going through in terms of getting their kids into schools. And because they don't feel like they're not smears from wearing tights or sandals, or it's just,
Well, I can't relate to the issue of people kind of commenting on what you look like when you walk down the street, because no one ever pays any attention to you at all.
You should wear a different tie.
You should wear a different tie. Yeah. Should try that. Or do you like your socks?
Yes, right.
Look, the problem with when it comes to institutions is that they force you to make binary choices, which is not how you really are as a person. Schools are a perfect example of that. There's this school, or there's this school, and this one does this right and that wrong, and this one does that wrong and that this right. So you're going to have to put some of these subtleties on hold when it comes to choosing the school, and then educate the child accordingly. It's not going to be an easy job. But halacha is always going to make certain things objective, and when you've done those, then you've checked that box, you tick that box if you like, and other things that are going to have to be part of the spirit of the halacha, that are going to be more subjective to you. Once you've done everything you can, then what more can you do? You know, we only have to do the best that we can. If people are going to misbehave, even if you do everything that you can, then that's on their cheshbon, that's not on your cheshbon. So you're kind of asking two different questions. I'm trying to work out which one is the key question. Getting your kids into school is one thing, and trying to project a chinuch that is not hypocritical and all this kind of stuff. Support the institution to keep your kids focused on it at the same time as critique it gently when they're doing things which are institutional, which is not easy to do. But then the other question is, like, you know, what do you do when people comment as to what people are making good comments or bad comments? I don't know, what are you worrying about?
Can I address it? Okay, so I'll address a bit.
So you can do that.
A little bit. I know exactly what you mean by tights. Tights seem to be the binary thing that decides if you're yeshivish or not, literally. And this seems to be across the world, meaning it seems to be also in Eretz Israel and also everywhere. If you are a woman who wears tights when she goes out, then you must be part of the yeshivish crowd. And if you're a woman who doesn't, then you are less yeshivish, less Haredi. And like Rabbi Manning said, it's really a social moray. It's really like a norm within a society. That means, just like, let's say, in some society, everyone wears black hats, and some of them, everyone wears shtreimels, and some societies, everyone wears bekeshes. When you become Hasidish, there's so many rules about what to wear. Like, you have to wear this kind of bekeshe and these kind of socks and these kind of shoes, and you can't move like one inch differently. If you wear shtreimel with the hairs up and not down, then you're this kind of chassid. I only learned this like over Pesach when we spent time with quite a few different chassidim. I was like, what's the difference between this shtreimel and this shtreimel? Oh, if you wear this shtreimel, then you're bavav, and if you wear that shtreimel, one had the hairs literally was up and one had the hairs down. So I'm saying, like, it was so tiny, it had nothing to do with halacha, and nothing to do with Yiddishkeit. Judah has nothing to do with anything, except that society has built their rules, and therefore you can only shop in that shop to buy your bekishes, and it has to have this kind of pattern that everyone's wearing the same. If you think that the rules for, like, us women are very strict, wait till you speak to a Hasidish man, that literally from their underwear to their tzitzis to their, it's unbelievably strict. I think that most women find the tights thing the most frustrating, because you can't wrap your head around it, because you're like, it's hot, I'm dressed Sanua, so I'm not wearing tights. Nobody cares, I'm still Sanua. And yet, the school will be like, well, she doesn't wear tights, so I guess she can't send her kids to my school. And you're like, okay, I don't understand what you just said. That makes no sense to me. But I think every institution, every shul, they make their parameters. And it's not a halachic parameter. It is, this is how we identify you as being part of this social group. And it's not, I don't know, there's some women who say tights make them feel more dignified. I know that Kate Middleton always wears tights, right? And there was a whole article.
Lesbians as well.
and she wears jeans, but there's a whole article.
No, she wears tights under the jeans.
Does she wear tights? No, but I'm saying she never, when she wears skirts and dresses, she always wears tights. There was a whole article I once read about it 10, 15 years ago that's the rule for the royals. If you're wearing any skirt, you have to wear tights because not mechubad, you're a royal. So does she think this will make her any more royal? I don't know. It's just a rule that she follows. You know what I mean? And she gets to live in the palace, so it's not too bad.
Let's make one sort of more halakhic point. The vast majority of people in the world, in the full community, paskin like the Mishnah Berurah, not like the Chazon Ish, on the issue of tights, which is the Mishnah Berurah very clearly says explicitly in the Mishnah Berurah that everything below the knee for a woman is an issue of dat yehudit. It's not an objective halakhic requirement. And you do what your society says is the appropriate thing to do. And a woman, a tights is not a chumrah. People think, oh, tights is a chumrah. We shouldn't be using the word chumrah any more than if I'm sitting on Pesach not eating rice, because that's my minhag as an Ashkenazi, and there's a Sephardi Rav next door who is eating rice, because there are things that I won't eat that he will eat, that doesn't make me one iota frumer than him. This is my minhag, this is his minhag. So a woman who, let's say, in a community where the women are very sensitized to sneers, but they just don't dress like Yeshivish women in Israel, you see this a lot more, in England and America less, where they're just not wearing tights but they're wearing sandals, and that woman is not doing any less halakhically. She's following her minhag, she's following her minhag. Now, we've all become terribly superficial as people in the Western world, and we've just imported that into our Judaism. So we can't tell who is, you know, deeply religiously committed on the inside, so people judge based on the outside, and it's pathetic. But that's how, it's pathetic we judge, but it's the tithes themselves on the chumrah. It's a requirement in a society where that's the minhag. I can't just say, oh, to heck with it, I'm going to eat rice. It's ridiculous. It's not chometz, it's not in the Torah, it's not in the Gemara. Like, what's the problem? The answer is no, I have a bind, I'm part of a community, I have a binding minhag. I can't just throw it out to the side and join a different community, become Sephardi, okay? Fine.
I haven't thought about it.
Okay.
The rice.
Yes. Yes.
Sorry, on that point, halakhically, how does that work exactly? You live in a community where there's not much of a community, but you send your children to a school that very much so for everyone in the community, like everyone there, they're wearing tights, it's just an accepted thing, but you don't actually live in that kind of community. Like, I mean, people can say, well, look, well,
right. Many communities, they don't have a strict dat yehudis. People don't have a community minhag based on their place. They have it based on their association. Now, I don't know whether the school will decide that unless you dress like this, you can't send your girls to the school.
So you already send your kids to the school, but you're there, but you live somewhere where everyone...
So it depends how strict your school is. If every time you pick up your kids you're wearing tights, they're happy, then it doesn't matter if when you walk down the street in Elstree you're not wearing tights. But if they found out and they called you in and they're like, we're so upset, you're walking down the street in Elstree shopping for your bananas, you're not wearing tights, I don't think they'd do that. Meaning, when you come to the school and you represent like a parent of the school, you have to look like a parent of the school because you are setting a set, you're part of that standard. But
is that the das? That's what I'm asking.
Yes.
Is that the das?
No, the school doesn't define your das yehudis. Your das yehudis is defined by the community, hashkafically, that you connect associate with and connect with. And you have to work that out for yourself. It may be that your community is easygoing either way. It doesn't have to have a regulation about everything.
Yes.
As they said, the Hasidim are very regulated. Lots of people are less regulated. You know, Mesh Sha'orim is very regulated.
And
Manhattan is less regulated. So. Yes. You know, but then when it comes to the school, you've got to decide how much you're going to play the game to keep school
That's
happy.
Right. Yes, how much you're
and,
play the
and game. Be respectful to the school. You know, if you have Minhag A and you go to visit people with Minhag B, you don't have to become them halakhically. You go to Meir Sha'arim for Shabbos, you don't have to be dressed like a lady from Meir Sha'arim. That's called Purim. That's not called Shabbos, okay? But you do have to adjust. You do have to adjust so as not to cause offense when you're going into somebody else's, if you like, community.
Yes.
So I think the school is almost a little bit similar. You have your minhag, that's fine, your family, and you're honest and okay with that. But then when you go to someone else's place, then you have to make sure that you're not going to offend
them. The other way as well, if you go to a community where it's maybe... don't really wear tights in your community, but they don't wear
okay, them. So this is a complicated area, but the rule with Minhagim is if you go from place A to place B, if you're going there to stay, then yes, you become one of them, whichever direction. If you're going there to visit, you stay you, but you adjust so as not to offend them. That's halacha, just not for just for tzniyos, it's for everything.
It should just be like a normal person. Yes. Yeah, go on. Everybody wonders if gray areas mix up your kids. So I want to tell you a massive gray area that I had when we lived in Eritrea for 10 years. And then we moved back to London. And most people who know me know that I have a very disabled son who's in a wheelchair. And we moved to London, and we're very Haredi, yeshivish. And my husband wants his daven in a certain shul. And that shul doesn't carry. And I said, I have a son in a wheelchair. There's no way I'm not carrying. So we went to speak to Rabbi Greenberg. Let's go speak to Rav. By the way, that's the best shalom bais tip I can ever give you. Have a Rav that you would listen to. And I said to him, so he said to me, that's very simple. Your husband shouldn't carry, and you should carry. I said, I don't want to be the Shabbos goy in my house. Thank you very much. That's not what I want my kids to see. Daddy doesn't carry. He's very holy. Mommy, she's the maid, and she will push the... That's not... What are you talking about? That's not acceptable. So Rabbi Greenberg, that's really how I said it to him, never. I really have to learn how to, like... I've spent so many years of my life just learning how to, like, speak it. Anyways. And he said to me, parents think that children don't understand gray areas. It's not true. As parents, you have to teach them gray areas. And it could be that you say, in order to respect the school, when I go to the school, like I know there's a school in London, they don't let any of the women wear band falls, let's say, only full shaitels. So when I go visit the school, sometimes I go there to see shows, so I have nieces in that school, will I wear my band fall? No. Why? Am I being disingenuous? No. I'm on their school property. That's the rule of their school. Why do I need to offend them? And I explain, and if I have to explain to my daughter, and I'll say, listen, everybody here only comes in full shaitels, so I'm going to be mechubad. And there's no, if you feel, I feel like also this is true in all chinuch areas, if you feel complexed about it, and you feel unsure about it, and you feel in two minds about it, your kids don't get the right message. But if you're very clear, this looks like a gray area, but it's not really, because what I do is I respect other people's, well, I think, first of all, any boys that you have won't even notice at all. Meaning, like, you know, you have boys and girls. Yeah, so my sons don't know where I'm wearing a shaitel, a bandful, a scarf. They don't care, yeah? And then I have daughters who are like, why are you wearing a scarf, Mom? You look like we live in Israel. I'm like, well, maybe I want to live in Israel, so I'm going to wear my scarf. Do not come shopping with me in that scarf. I will not walk in the street with you in that scarf. Okay. And when I had scarves on in my son, they couldn't care less. We're just going to Kosh King to buy stuff. They don't care. So I'd say it does, sometimes it matters with the genders, because I think the girls notice much more what I'm wearing than the boys ever did. And they care more than the boys ever did. So that's also, so I don't have to explain it to my sons as much as I have to explain it to my daughters. But also, it's a level of comfort that you have to have with yourself. That's why I learned from that meeting with Rabbi Greenberg. He said to me, no, it's not true. There is a gray area here. Also, there was another part of the Shiloh, which is that my father built the Erev in London. And there was actually an issue of Kibbud Av Ha'Em, and we spoke to Yitzhak Berkowitz about it, and he felt that the issue of Kibbud Av Ha'Em was more important than the minhag of that shul, and therefore we should. So we were also dealing with a few other things. But I remember he reassuring me. He said, children will understand there is gray areas if you understand. But if you don't understand what you're doing, then your children will be very confused.
Can I just pick up on something actually? Yes. Just a very important point. Judaism is a complex religion. That is the message that we give our kids at school every single day. Halacha is complex, learning is complex, Rashi is complex, Chumash is complex, Gemara is complex. Everything is complex. And yet our insecurities about Hashkafa lead us to say, no, no, we don't want our people to be confused. You've heard that word, confused. Confused is just an excuse to say, I don't want to deal with the complexities of Hashkafa. And that's, I think, something that you don't have to be worried about. Confused is used as a smokescreen to mean that it's my way or the highway. I think it's much more healthy, much healthier to have a sort of great understanding of some of these issues than to teach your kids the hypocrisy, which is, yeah, the school says you can't have an iPhone, and as one student of mine said, but what I do is I just make a kinyan with my father, and he buys the iPhone the day that I have to sign that I don't have an iPhone, and then I get back from him the next day, so I signed honestly, and all you're doing is giving your kids chinuch to lie and use the system and play the system, and the parents know that, and the school knows that, and the kids know that, and that is just disgusting.
Yeah.
And therefore, giving your kid a complexity in, well, that's, you know,
is a much more healthy way to bring them up.
Also, we said to them, we went to speak to a Rav about it. And that was also a chinuch moment right. for my children. Mommy and Daddy had an issue that we disagreed on, so we went to speak to a Rav about it. And then the Rav gave up us a pasak, and then we lived like that. And that's also a chinuch issue, meaning we don't know everything ourselves, and so we go and speak to somebody about it. That's also very important to be able to give over to your children.
Rebbe, you had a question.
You mentioned about what girls notice, you mentioned about what the beauty industry and society shows us. Mammon, you mentioned about the, I believe it was a cross-border bag in one of the Caribbean publications. Your publication, the publication, not had an image of a woman. The girls, women see these other images of women. Is there a possibility, do you touch on in the book, of from publications showing from role models?
Yes, this is something that I know that Professor Hamilton feels strongly about. This is one of the many
one of the
issues.
Many things that I feel very strongly about.
And I just want to add, I was in the situation of putting some women in a publication and there was a woman, she didn't want her face in it, so I understand
right.
that.
Right, so maybe I'll just start with that. First of all, the book does deal with this. It deals with it in a gentle way, because I'm not trying to alienate people. The book is trying to be inclusive rather than exclusive. But I think, and I'm sure that Representative Hamilton will comment on it, the last point is a good point, which is I think there are very good reasons for a woman in her own sense of sneers, or for that matter for a man in his own sense of sneers, not to want their picture plastered around a publication. I think there are also good reasons for her, as society might say, look, the dasyahudis in our society is we do not. The women do not want to have pictures in the publication. I think that's legitimate. But you and I know that's not what's actually happening. What's actually happening is that, you know, men are deciding that they're not going to put any women's pictures in any papers. And the reason they're doing that, it could be that the actual reason they're doing that is more economical. They don't want to be, you know, boycotted or firebombed or whatever it is by extremists. That could be part of it as well. Or advertisers pull out of their paper. That could be a lot of it. But let's assume there's more of a halachic reason. They're saying that, look, men have a mitzvah of shmiras einayim. And therefore, if men are going to be looking inappropriately at women's pictures, we don't want to facilitate that. I think that is an incorrect argument for a very straightforward reason. That the Mishnah Berurah paskens very clearly that there is no halachic problem with a man looking at an actual face of a tzanua, appropriately dressed woman, and talking to them in a normal way. He says that if a man wants to be machmir, and wants to have a chumra in shmiras einayim, that's legitimate, and maybe for some people even advisable, but it has the rubric of a chumrah. Then you have to ask, when is a chumrah appropriate, when is it not? And the Masilas Yesharim, and the book does deal with this, talks very clearly that whenever you're suggesting a chumrah for yourself or for anyone else, there has to be a weighing of, is it going to do more harm than good? With baseline halacha, there is no weighing. The food's treif, I can't eat it, even if it's going to offend people, I can't eat it. But here we're dealing with a chumrah, and the amount of damage which this is being, you know, inflicting on women, on people, on men, on just having this policy so outweighs the chumrah, in my personal opinion, that it's something which just should be opposed, and a lot of people oppose it. And even in the Haredi world, there is not total uniformity of how people deal with this, and some publications do this, some publications do that. I think it's a question of trying to, I don't know how to change it, but I do think it's wrong, but I don't know how to change it.
Yes. I actually had a discussion. I was invited, my family was invited for Shabbos to a Rav's house in the community, and he has many daughters, okay, and many sons, got a big family, and he's very opposed to having any women's pictures in anything. And I'm very not, so you can imagine that Shabbos meal. And I said to him, "Wa chaval, that your daughters could probably recognize most of the celebrities in the world, but they don't know what any Rebbetzin looks like. They couldn't tell you what any Rebbetzin looked like, but they can tell you that what the name of this famous actress, the name of this famous thing. I could probably give them like a page of 10 pictures, and they could give me the name of every single actress, but they could, or singer or whatever, and they couldn't give me any of the names of the Rebbetzins. So I said, everybody looks for role models in their life. All men do, and all women do, and it should be like that. And if you're saying that I said, for your own daughters. I said, I'm sitting at this Shabbos table. I'm looking at your daughters. I want to ask them, does anybody here know who, like, what Rebbetzin blah, blah looks like? No. Or this Rebbetzin, or this famous Rebbetzin? No. Does anybody know what J-Lo looks like? So I'm like, so who are you putting up there as a role model for your daughter? And I said, it's just, we live in a world that's very visual. So what visuals are you giving to your daughter that's saying that's the role model I want to be? And if you don't give her those visuals, she'll have other visuals. And I think it was the only point where he stopped and he listened. you know, because I said, you can have however many chumras you like, but what you're doing is damaging your own daughters. You're damaging, like, all the Beis Yaakov girls, all these girls, you're harming them. I don't know why you're harming. I have a lot to say about it. I also, like Rabbi Manning, don't know what to do about it. I don't know if enough. See, what happens is there needs to be a boycott, obviously. We have to boycott the magazines, but everybody's still going to buy these magazines. If we hurt them financially enough, that's really the answer to most. I don't know, isn't that how you protest properly? I don't know. Yeah, go on.
There is a campaign to make posters for girls' schools with pictures of Rebbetzins and female role models from Jewish history.
Really? That's amazing.
One of the things that I personally require, although this doesn't change the world, is that if there is any suggestion of having my picture on a poster, if there are also women speaking, I'll say, if you're not having their picture on the poster, then don't put any pictures on the poster. Yes. I don't want a man's picture and then not woman's. And then no one has a picture, so they'll have no pictures. That's okay as well.
Yes, so I taught that to another organization as well. Like, they had the men's picture and then they had, instead of the women's picture, like a pink bow. And I'm like, I'm so offended. I said, I'm offended. I am not a pink bow. And everybody knows what you look like, so why do you have pictures of yourselves? Do you just like putting pictures of yourselves up? If you're not going to put my picture up, you can't put your picture up. I don't understand. Like,
and I have no problem being a pink bow.
You don't have.
No.
So Rabbi Manning, in the next poster, there'll be a picture of me, and Rabbi Manning will be a pink bow.
I'm totally cool with that. One last question, because it's time for dessert. Anyone?
Yeah.
Yes.
So interesting, because I agree with you that there, what's happened in the world also in the last, let's say, 5-10 years, is that there are lots of Jewish female influencers that are fashionistas or fashioners, or I don't know what you call them, fashion influencers, I don't know what you call them, it doesn't matter. And they try and mimic a Vogue fashion, just in a tzanua way. So they wear outrageous dresses, but it's tzanua, technically, but it's so outrageous. If they would walk down the street, it's not really tzanua, because they're attracting every single person's attention that they see, which is not really what Sneas is about. And they're also saying everybody should look beautiful all the time. And other women are saying, well, no, thank you. I don't want to wear full face of makeup every single day. I don't want to wear full shaitel every single day. I don't want to wear a gorgeous dress every single day. So I think that the wealthier communities, I think women dress for other women. And I think amongst women in some communities, there's a lot of competition. Who can dress prettier? Who can dress fancier? Who can wear the more expensive handbag? Who can? And I think it's up to each woman to attach herself to the right community of women. That means within the London community, you'll have pockets of all these different types of women, and you have to reject it wholesale. You have to say, I'll dress beautifully for a wedding, or I'll dress beautifully for a Shabbos, but I don't think it's appropriate to dress beautifully and then, I don't know, walk, go choose your bananas, I don't know, or your apples, or your, I don't know if that's appropriate. Saying that, there's some whole entire communities of Jewish women who live on a certain standard and they all walk around dressed like that. I don't know if we can judge them. All I can say is that if it makes you uncomfortable, so you know where you're holding. And if it doesn't make them uncomfortable, I can't I don't know if...
And I think that maybe just to finish off, I don't need to have the last word, but just to finish off, I think that one of the things we're trying to do with this book is just broaden the conversation to help people think about some of these things a little bit differently. And maybe one of the things that we can do is to try and get people to read it, to borrow it, to think about it, to talk about it. And maybe just that chinuch angle, maybe the Torah speaks for itself. If we can get people to actually just read what the Torah says, then they'll maybe think about it a bit differently, and these things will have a slow burn impact. But Ezrat Hashem, if that helps in some way, that's great. Thank you very, very, very much. There's more books at the front, and there's more dessert over here. Thank you so much. It was lovely. Great. It's all right. We have to work out tomorrow night some more structure.
They don't want to ask us to stop. What's going on? That's cool. Not cool. So we have to talk to her. I want to talk to her.
Yes. Okay.